Hello, this is the Careering into Motherhood podcast with me, Jane Johnson. It's the 1st of December. The year is almost over, and while the rest of the country seems to be winding down for Christmas, most of the mums I know seem to be ramping up and bracing themselves for a season of bake sales, tombolas, shopping for everyone, and maybe the odd night out themselves too. But if in among all of that, you've got that little nagging feeling that next year needs to be the one where you go back to work, get that promotion, change jobs, start that business, get back on that health kick, then have a look at our website because we have a special Christmas offer to help you. 30 of our amazing coaches are offering a coaching voucher. For £99, you'll get an initial call with your chosen coach to talk about your aims, followed by an hour-long session, one-to-one, just to talk about you. After which, you'll get a follow-up email with a coaching tool or exercise to take things further. Now, of course, in one session, you need to have reasonable expectations about how much can be achieved, but it is a fantastic way of kickstarting your year, getting some external, impartial input, and getting a real feel for just how powerful coaching can be. So if you don't need another festive scented candle, but would like something a bit more meaningful this year, then head over to our site, www.careeringintomotherhood.com, and get yourself started. Now, without further ado, let me introduce my guest today, Jessica Fernley. Jessica is a coach who works with women who want to go freelance or start their consulting business. Her clients are on both sides of the Atlantic, and it's a business she's built from the ground up. From a nervous breakdown in her 20s to being at the coalface of a fast-growing startup and then starting her own consultancy, she uses her experience of all of these to the benefit of her clients. Welcome, Jessica. Jessica, I am delighted to have you on the podcast today, a highly experienced podcaster yourself and one of our partner coaches. But you come at both podcasting and coaching from a slightly different angle from that which a lot of our cohort of coaches do. I'm really pleased you were able to make it today. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jane. It's wonderful to be here. And it's kind of fun sitting on the other side of the table, as it were.
Well, let's start by talking a little bit about your business. You are a female founder yourself in your own right. You run a hugely successful consulting business supporting women who want to launch their own consulting firms or want to strike it out on their own. Talk to me a little bit first about how you got into this. It sounds quite niche.
Yeah, it's super niched. That's what I like to say to people, because to be honest, it is. I work with women consultants who are looking to do B2B consulting with corporate firms. And typically my clients are in the low six figures when we start working together. My special thing that I love to help them do is get from six figures to seven figures and beyond in their consulting business. Straight away, it's not the normal thing that even a business coach does, because so many business coaches focus on like, let me help you start a business. It was really interesting actually, and could be a long story. I'll try not to make it too long and boring. So like I had a bit of an unusual route through my career, because I actually worked before I went to university. So I went to university when I was 21, having done 3 years of work in the NHS. And by the point that I finished, I was doing project management work in that department. It then meant that like the other side of university, I did 3 years of a bachelor's degree in history at the University of Nottingham. And I actually loved it. So I stayed on for a fourth year and did a master's degree as well. So at the point that I was looking for jobs, I wasn't 21, I was 25. And I already had work experience. I'd also done kind of internships and stuff like that while I was a student. So I was really fortunate. It wasn't difficult for me to get an entry-level job in a London office. Age 25, 26, I moved down to London. And to be honest, I'm from Watford originally. So that was kind of my stamping ground anyway. But I started this job and we worked in Millbank Tower. So on the north bank of the Thames near Pimlico Tube. And I was just like, look at my life. It's been wonderful. But the thing was, the job was everything I wanted, and there was progression opportunities that I'd started to take advantage of. And, you know, it was the kind of company where you would be in like 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. And I was starting to get a real feel for, like, I would love to be a consultant one day. These guys, they just swan in and they like say whatever they like and they get paid a ton of money. It looks awesome. And so I was there kind of very busily kind of working my way up the ladder and as a project manager. But the thing is, there were other things going on like behind the scenes for me. Like, I wasn't actually coping brilliantly well with life. I had very high anxiety levels. I didn't actually realize that I had anxiety until I was 27. And it was one of those things I was like, oh, that makes sense of everything.
So do you think you had had that for some time? It wasn't this job that brought that out?
Definitely. I think I'd had it like through my teenage years for sure, and not really had the label to put on it correctly. Mm. And was aware that I often felt very stressed and like quite tightly wound, but again, just didn't really have enough self-understanding to really be able to process that meaningfully. And really, it became an issue while I was at university. I was extremely good at university. I got a first class degree and I got a distinction in my master's. But no one ever asks you, for the record, no one ever asks you what grade you got for your master's degree. I've been bursting to tell people for like 15 years. I've never been asked. The price that I'd kind of paid for working that hard and doing that well, I do feel I can look back and see that it was already the case that my mental health and even my physical health was starting to really suffer. I just had such a high level of stress all the time, and it started to manifest. I had really bad irritable bowel syndrome, and like really that just got worse and worse when I lived in London. Commuting didn't suit me at all. I got really tired. You know what it's like, you're crammed in on the tube, someone sneezes and you're like, great, so now I'm gonna get flu. I had a really low immune system during those years that I was working that job, and it really did get to the point where by the time I was 27, I just got married and I was like, all my problems will go away because I'm getting married.
my knight in shining armor.
I know, right? No pressure on my poor husband. But really, I think that's when I just started to feel like, I don't know if this is really going to get better by itself. And it was quite a scary time because I was like, I know that I'm really good at this work and I really love it and I see so much potential, but like my body just isn't keeping up with where I want to be going. And so in the end, I had a breakdown in 2010, and that was such a hard time because I was just like, no. I can look back now and kind of laugh because it was my ground zero. But at the same time, I think that was the beginning of my recovery and rebuilding as a person.
Who you are. Mm.
Exactly. I had to spend about 7 months literally just like in bed, like recovering. My body was so exhausted. And at the time, again, we didn't even have the word burnout. So I was just kind of like, I don't really know what's going on with me, but I just know that I can't have the corporate career that I was planning to have. But the fun thing about that was that it put me on this completely different path. That led to eventually like a part-time job, like almost like a volunteer job practically, but just that was kind of my rehab. Like, yes, I don't need to spend the rest of my life in bed. I can do some stuff. And then actually that led to a second part-time job working in a startup company, which I did on a part-time basis for about 6 months. And then actually that turned into like a much more substantial job because I was looking at their company and thinking, I know stuff about business. Like there's some stuff I can definitely contribute. And at the same time, they were getting to know me and they were like, I think there's some stuff that actually you could help us with a ton. And so I ended up being head of operations in that company. I worked there for 4 years. And then in my fourth year there, I had my first maternity leave and I had my first son. And they also decided to sell the company. So I was at this crossroads and I was like, I feel like I've contributed so much there. I feel like there's something else for me, but what is that? And that was really what set me on the path to setting up my own coaching business. I think at the time I was thinking so small about it. It was completely crazy. But for some reason, I decided to set out on that path. I wasn't even really confident to call myself a business coach at that time. I just had this feeling that I might be good at it. Nearly 9 years later, I think we can say, yeah, that was a good move.
You clearly demonstrated from before you even went to university quite an entrepreneurial flair. The idea that formative experience at such a young age has all accumulated into kind of what you are and who you are now. and bringing all of that to bear. A word of reassurance to anyone out there thinking, oh God, this is a dead end job, or, you know, I'm not learning anything from this. Just wait, because all of it contributes to who you will eventually become.
Exactly. Like, your story is not over. You might even be at that kind of ground zero point, or just in a complete dead end. Actually, that's the start of receiving a calling to do something different and something bigger. And actually, the thing I didn't say, like, alongside working for the NHS as obviously like a rock star project manager, I was actually like a bit of a rock star as well. And because the reason I didn't want to go to university, my poor parents, they were not pleased with this decision. I was in a rock band that I started with my school friends when we were 14, 15.
Really?
And we were just these, like, I now look back and I'm like, how awesome were we? We sent off little demo tapes to some of these London venues, like the Bull and Gate in Kentish Town and the Garage in Islington.
Amazing.
And we got on the stage, like, we got these gigs. And so, like, you know, we were driving around the country and we played in like Cambridge and Sheffield, where I now live. We drive past the Lead Mill where my band played, I don't know, like 1999 or something. And I say to my kids, Mummy's band played there once. And they're just like, whatever.
Now, I have to say, for listeners, if we were having this conversation in one of our other, you know, along the lines of one of our previous ones, I would have been like, wow, I'd have never have got that from you, Jessica. However, you are sitting here today with pink hair, which obviously we love. And I'm just like, well, that doesn't surprise me at all. Of course you were in a rock band.
Yeah, and it's funny. I think that I've definitely been in a phase this year of like reconnecting with that version of myself. And I think in a sense, like, probably the burnout happened because I was trying really hard to be the more respectable version of myself and not be this rebel, not be this disruptor. But unfortunately, I am a disruptor and stuff just tends to break around me because I have that kind of energy, even when I'm trying not to. I'm 40 this year and I'm just starting to be like, I'm just going to embrace it. This is who I am, pig hair, whatever, everything.
I definitely think there's something around women as we come to 40s or 50s, in my case, and beyond 60s, 70s, that we suddenly realise we have all of this life experience that actually is bloody employable, bloody important, really makes the world go round. And yet men, and hugely generalising, obviously, as I do here, seem to get to grips with that side of their characters so much earlier in life. And I think whether it's motherhood or just age and experience, let's say, I'm just loving seeing loads of my friends really getting to grips with who they want to be. And obviously always were, but not having to hide things anymore, hide their personalities under a bushel.
I do sometimes think like what it would be like to be a man and just be like your whole career is just stretching out in front of you for like 60 years without a pause. And it just isn't like that for women, is it? But then I think the advantage of what it is like for us, if we choose to have children, which I have chosen to, we get these little seasons and like almost these little bookended parts where we can like rediscover a different part of ourselves. And I do think it's massively significant for me. My youngest child is now 5 and he's started school, not this September, but last September. And there was something about, all my babies have gone to school. Mm-hmm. I don't have a baby at home at the moment. It started a new season for me, I think,
really?
Just in like getting some energy back and, you know, just in enjoying existence without it just being like, quick, who needs a snack? Who needs a nappy?
Yes, exactly.
You know, that whole phase.
Yes. Yeah. And all kudos to you, Jessica, as well, for, you know, obviously having run your business, set up your business, run your business through, you know, maternity leaves and young children and so on, because I know that is not easy at all. Let's talk a little bit about your, I don't know if there's such a thing as your typical client, but a woman will come to you typically having had a career or being in a career, but feeling there's something, that there needs to be something else, something more.
Yeah, definitely. So typically the women that I work with, they're kind of like 40 to probably 60, 55 in age. And I think that's such a golden period for women because it's just like they've got these decades of experience behind them from their corporate career. Quite often they've been like quite influential in the organization that they've been in. But they have already decided that they want to work independently. They want to set up their own consulting business. And typically, they've already got kind of the first 200,000 to 300,000 in revenue under their belt, which, you know, straight away, I'm just like, you're so awesome. But the problem is, they've got the money, or they're starting to get the money they want to see, but the price they're having to pay for it is that they are booked out 9 to 5, sometimes 8 to 6 and more, like every day. They can't take any vacation time. They're starting to have to work in the evenings and weekends. It's always in their head all the time. They just feel like they can never switch off. And actually what I help them do is remove a lot of that friction and start to really like simplify what they're trying to do, go really high level with what they're trying to do. And that's a really important part of what we're talking about today, isn't it? Like starting to serve at your highest level instead of doing what I see women do so often and be like, well, I know I'm really good at this, but if I'm going to start my own business, I should probably drop down what I'm expecting. I should probably go for entry level work. I have seen Facebook posts where people have said, I've priced myself in line with minimum wage. And straight away, you just think, no. So I'm convinced of it. I exist to help women not fall into those traps, not to feel like they have to make themselves smaller, but to create a business that allows them to be bigger. And I think so often there's been a lot of messaging with my clients, like they're too much. They need to just like settle down. They need to like, you know, pull their weight. They need to wind their neck in, not like get in the way in corporate. Those can be quite hard scars to overcome, and they definitely leave like this lasting legacy. But it's starting to strip away all of that and just be like, actually, who do you want to be? Who you actually, underneath all these layers of stuff that you've been told you're not allowed to wear, say, do, be, all those kinds of things. It's a really wonderful process of actually allowing women to connect with their inner intuition and start to be like, do you know what? You do have a vision for something bigger. So like, what is that going to be? And how can we bring it into being?
Really interesting. And I was having a conversation with somebody else this week about the fact that we, particularly, and again, huge generalization, but women will tend to put themselves bottom of any kind of list in terms of personal needs, just with one caveat, I guess, around women. It's also obviously, you know, parents. As soon as you become a parent, your needs, in theory, come below those of your children. But the way that then plays out into women's careers and what we want to be. And someone said to me, yeah, but, you know, imagine channeling that idea of when you're a child, you say to any child, what is it you want to be when you're older? My son at the moment has this thing. He wants to be a footballer. Now, he is, let's be really honest, he is shit at football. He has never played it in his life. He hated doing Saturday clubs, anything. But he's realised that he can buy a Bugatti Chiron if he becomes a Premiership footballer.
Motivation, so yes.
That's what he wants to be. Like, talent, skill comes way, way down the list in his eyes. And it's interesting at what point we lose that self-belief. Where do we start being told, no, you can't do that. You haven't got the talent. You haven't got the skill. You're not the right person for that. And it is a conversation. I'm sorry, but it is a conversation that I do not hear men having.
Mm. I think it's really interesting. And I think literally in my life, I'm able to see the point. Like when I was 18, 19, I was doing my band. I decided I wanted to be a novelist. So I was writing the draft of my first novel. I wrote 45,000 words and then I just kind of freaked out and never touched it again. I am going to write a book.
Is it in a suitcase somewhere? Yeah.
Yeah, I've got it somewhere. I'm sure I do. But like, I was still in that mindset of like, why can't I do this? Like, no one's like, I want to do it. Therefore, I'm going to try. Therefore, I probably will. But definitely, there aren't a lot of voices saying to women, yeah, you can totally do that. So many people told me like being in a band was not a good idea. I didn't have a lot of support at home for like the lifestyle that I wanted to have with it. And like my family definitely didn't think that I could be a novelist. So I think it's really challenging as parents, isn't it? Because we want to put our kids in situations where we're setting them up for the best possible outcomes. Mm. And my children are 5 and 8. So like they still want to be like an astronaut or live on Mars or something. Mm. I'm like, yeah, of course you will. That's fine. But I think it must be really difficult getting into like the teenage years, starting to think, well, what do you want to do? And I think we have to be really careful how we have these kinds of conversations, because our children pick up very quickly if we don't believe in them. And I think in a sense, it makes me a good parent, but also a difficult parent, because I'm like, well, look what I've done. It's not conventional at all. And yes, on paper, at 18, could I have done any of these things? I never would have, even when I started my business, I don't think I actually believed that I'd get to where I now am. And where I now am, I'm just scratching the surface of what I actually sense that I have the potential to achieve.
Given all of your breadth of experience and what you do with clients, for women we have listening today who are thinking, you know, yeah, actually, the corporate world is enough. I've had enough of the corporate world. I'm thinking of striking out on my own, going, whether it's contracting, going as a contractor, consultant, let's call it, or starting your own business. I'd like to ask you for some of your top tips, top pieces of advice, things you've that have held you in good stead, or things that you talk to clients about.
I'd love to. So the first thing I'd want to say is know your body's signals. I love the book, The Body Keeps the Score. It's one of those books, it's kind of groundbreaking because it starts to connect what goes on for people emotionally with what is going on for us physically. And obviously you've heard my story. That has been huge in my life. And it's also the case, and I think we all have to get to this point as adults, is that we stop just kind of doing what everyone thinks we should do. And we actually start to listen to our own bodies and make our own decisions and say no to things because that's a choice we're allowed to make. When I went through my breakdown, my burnout experience, that happened because my body was saying no, and I wasn't willing to listen. And I also didn't understand. And it started me on a real journey in the therapy, to be honest, because I went to therapy for 4 years after I had my breakdown. And my therapist at first, she used to say, "How are you feeling today?" And I'd just be like, "Fine." And there'd be a pause, and she was clearly expecting me to say more. And the thing that she was trying to teach me, and eventually did teach me in 4 years, is that like there are things happening in our bodies all the time, like maybe a bit of anxiety that we feel in our stomach, maybe a bit of excitement in our lungs. There are all different emotions being processed and that we can listen out for. I had no idea how to do that. And, you know, I think it was very, when I started to understand that, it's like, well, this is why the burnout happened, because I didn't know how to look after myself in these quite basic ways. But I do think that it's a stage that lots of us have to go through. But I think when you're in a situation, whether, you know, you're an entrepreneur like me, or you're in your career and you're feeling all, you're having to fight your body every day. I'm tired. I don't want to do this. I don't like this. It can be really scary to start to listen to those things because it asks us big questions, and sometimes we might have to deconstruct certain parts of our lives to like really follow the thread of what we're starting to see. But I would just, and this kind of links to my second thing, is like do the inner work. That would be my really big tip, because I've definitely found, like, so I started my business when I was 31, now I'm 39, nearly 40. I am not the same person as I was when I was 31. And the thing that has started that process for me has been going on a journey of starting my own business. And I don't think you need to be an entrepreneur to have that happen, because it's really about an awakening and starting to be able to listen to your intuition, your inner voice, your inner sense of this is actually the right thing to do in this situation. I speak to women all the time who have really strong messages coming internally all the time, but they have been told not to listen to themselves, you know. And it comes out in things like, oh no, I'm not allowed to go into that kind of meeting. Oh no, I'm not allowed to speak directly to that client. I'm not allowed to send emails without someone else reading it first. That was a huge thing for me, because I am quite like I said, quite a disruptor, and I can combust quite a lot of situations just because I'm also like deeply committed to telling the truth and, you know, being direct about communication and not messing around and sort of allowing stuff to just fester when I think it would be much better for it to be, you know, wide open. So I've been told many times that I'm not allowed to talk to certain clients and I'm not allowed to, you know, send emails without other people reading them. But then for me, suddenly when I was in my own business, I was like, I've got to send an email and there's no one to check it.
That freedom. We have large newsletters. I mean, I still get the fears every time I send that. I'm still thinking, Jesus, I wish I had someone, a manager that I could pass this up to.
That's the thing. When you have a manager, you can feel a bit like, oh, this is really frustrating. And then when you suddenly are the boss and technically you can do anything that you like, you're like, oh, I wish I had a line manager to just vet this for me and make it feel safer. But that's the thing. I think sort of the first thing being know your body's signals, and the second thing, do the inner work. because actually for me, it's been an amazing journey of just literally following this little thread that started with my breakdown, my burnout experience. At the time, it just felt like, oh my gosh, my life is just combusted. So like, what even am I going to do? I couldn't see it at the time, but now I look back and it was just so clear that one opportunity led to another, led to another. By the time I started my business, I had the perfect range of experience to be able to offer the exact service that I offer now. It was already in place at the point that I started my business 8 years ago. But you don't always get that at the time. It's trusting that actually there is a path, even if it feels like there isn't one.
It's really interesting. I'm fascinated by, the interlink of those two points, but this idea of listening to yourself, and this huge move on social media, Instagram in particular, about self-care, looking after yourself, listening to your body, etc. On the one hand, we have all of those messages. On the other hand, while we view, and Jessica, you yourself talk about, you know, 6-7-figure consultancy, and we seem to value people based on their salary, their revenue, whatever it is they're bringing in. And then I watched the Elon Musk program last night where the people were talking about having people around him, having worked with him, and how it was like, we are only as good as the hours and things that we put in. What you put in, you get out. And you cannot deny to a degree that is true. And so I think especially when we go out on our own and we're still bloody running off to collect the kids from school or nursery, then we're still trying to do dinner, then we're still trying to get on top of all the emails and grow our business and see ourselves as successful. It is really hard at that point, no matter how much your brain tells you or even your stomach tells you, you need to stop, you need to slow down. It is really hard to do that without feeling like you are taking your foot off the gas.
I think that's why the journey is so important, I think, because I did 5 years of my business where I started off pretty much actually with the ideal client that I now have and like knowing that I wanted to work with consultancy businesses. And then instead of like, and this happens so much for my clients, it's like, here's their destination and then there's where they want to get to. And there's a really short path that connects the two things. But instead of taking the short path, we go, oh, I think I'll go over here and do something completely different for a while. And so I took a big detour in my business for probably 5 years where I wasn't serving at my highest level. I was playing really small. And of course, that was massively frustrating for me because every time I felt like, oh, you know, it's like I'm getting clients, it's going really well, I'm really enjoying it. And I'd be like, yeah, but I'm using about 3% of my actual skills and ability. I know so much more than these people are ready to talk about. And it wasn't their fault, it was my fault because I had created this container that like wasn't aiming for the people that I actually wanted to be serving. And 3 years ago, I went through a lot of sort of personal development stuff myself, I think, and had some breakthroughs. But I was also working with a really awesome coach at the time. And we were working on my brand and like what we needed to do with it. And she just suddenly said one day, I think you need to be working with women consultants. And I think we need to call it 7-figure consultant. And my company is called 7-figure Consultant Limited, because it was like I was struck by lightning. And I was like, that is the thing. Like the clients that I had who were consultants, I was like, I love this work. And I loved it because I knew it because I'd built a consultancy firm from 6 to 7 figures and then it had been sold. And so it was just kind of like it all slotted into place. But I think the thing that I knew at the time when it happened, and I also look back and I'm just like, you know, facepalm, I could have had that business from day one. I didn't actually need to spend the 5 years just kind of playing it small. I was terrified that I'd get in situations where people would be like, you actually don't know anything. And so, of course, I played really small and then attracted all the people who are going to send you those kinds of messages, because that's what happens when we're actually not living out our potential, when we're going lower than we actually should be. We receive all the wrong messages because it's misaligned. But women tend to hear that and go, it's because I don't know anything. It's because I'm not good enough. And so even in my own story, I can totally see where I have completely done that. But then at the same time, I did that because I wasn't ready, because my mindset wasn't in the right place. And like, I'm really thankful that actually I've still got to where I think I would have got. But it's just that knowledge that I could have had that much sooner. I feel like that is true for a ton of women in the world, full stop.
You talk about serving at your highest level. I can really empathize with this concept. But you feel the higher you go, the further you have to fall. And we do have this thing, again, more generalizing, but this thing that, okay, if I go out there and I say I'm going to do X, Y, Z, and I have to be quite verbose about it. I have to be confident. I have to get out there and tell people, otherwise who's going to come and find me? But it's very public. And then when things do not go as planned, because let's be realistic here, not
90% of businesses getting it wrong.
Exactly. Let alone the percentage of female-owned businesses that fail. So there is an understandable nervousness around women serving at their highest level or playing at their highest level. And I'm really interested in how you coach clients, female clients, through that process to be brave.
The thing that I have been saying to clients a lot this year is that we always want to make everything safe and fun. Those two things are really important because, yes, like there are times when it's like you could go and like do a TED talk tomorrow. You could go and stand on like a stadium stage if you wanted to. You've got the message there. It's strong enough. But actually, they're not in a place where that feels like a safe or fun thing to do. So the way that I've helped my clients do this, because it's really important, there are so many like minefields out there when you're coaching, because actually you can become this quite stern, almost like parental figure where, you know, I've had clients where they've been like, oh, I didn't do my homework. Please don't tell me off. And it's like, sorry, like, is that what you think that we're doing here? But you can get clients who they kind of almost put you in that role of being the stern mother figure, then you feel like they think that your expectation is right, like up here. And so they're always like trying to struggle. And I think sometimes there's a lot of projection that can happen when like they have had issues like with their mum or their dad and feeling like they're not good enough. That shows up in the coaching relationship. So it's been very important to me to, over the years, like develop that. So I can feel it coming now. And actually, I've become a lot more intuitive and able to trust my own instincts. So quite often, when I meet someone, I can feel what their issues probably are already. And I probably could always do that. But I think now I trust that I can do it. So I'm more confident to sort of, I wouldn't necessarily tell the client that straight away. But when it comes up, I'll be like, yeah, I knew that had happened. I think it's giving people a way to sort of feel safe, not like they're having to do these really awful things to scare themselves or impress me or live up to my expectation of them. But alongside that as well, when you start to think, well, what would make it fun? That tends to ignite a completely different energy in them. So instead of like, oh my gosh, I've got to live up to what everyone's expecting, it becomes like, what would I actually like to do? And you see it like completely happen in their eyes straight away when they start to be like, okay, so what is my intuition telling me? Like, what is the thing that I've always thought I would love to do that? I think it's super interesting listening to women talk sometimes, because whenever we are triggered or jealous or irrationally furious with someone else because they're doing something awesome, I always think that gives us a bit of a clue that we would actually like to be doing that ourselves.
There's probably a bit more truth in that than I would like to admit, especially going, hey, no, you know, we're all women supporting women.
But then I think there are always, and you know, my client sessions are safe places and like my clients can speak completely candidly. There are sometimes like, they're just like, I really don't like this woman. I really don't like what she does. I really don't like how she does it. And I'm always like, I think we've uncovered the thing that you wish that you had that you haven't maybe even expressed to yourself yet. And I think it's a really helpful thing to know how to get self-reflective with some of those moments where we're feeling emotions that we're like, oh, that's not normal. And that's not what I want to be feeling. But what is it telling me?
Really important point. Time is marching on. So I'm going to ask you for one or two more pieces of your wisdom.
Sure. So my third thing is make your peace with wanting more. And I think that's a really important thing for women, because firstly, we've kind of been programmed out of, like you said before, Jane, even as mums, it's like we are last priority. One of my business friends and I, we were talking the other day, I was saying, I just bought like new pants and new vests and new socks because I realized that all of my clothes had holes in. And like, I would never hesitate to buy those things for my kids. But it was a real like, am I allowed to do this? We were laughing because, yeah, she was like, oh my gosh, me too. I've got a massive hole in my pants today. I think that can be reflective of actually our attitude on an awful lot of things, that often we ourselves are running on empty. And so actually, it's a bit of a cliche, but you know, we have to be able to put on our own oxygen mask first. We say that very easily, but we still don't often do it. You know, I think sometimes we don't eat the meals we should, and we're running around doing all these things for the kids. I think a really important part of my own self-care is like just being like, I'm allowed to eat like really nice food, even when it's just me in the house. I have to do this because I have to have the energy to be able to do all the stuff later. But I think linking back to kind of wanting more. I know for me, like when I had my breakdown, like in those years afterwards, I was not really okay. You know, I was functioning eventually, but like it was a very sore subject for me. And I felt like I've lost my career. That wasn't the thing that I chose. I didn't want to be in this situation. I remember there was a situation where I was at a family party and just a few family members were just like, oh, you know, she really could be doing more. And I just remember feeling completely furious in that moment because I was just like, don't you think if I could do more, I would do more? Like, this is kind of the hand that I've been dealt and I'm trying to make the best of it. And now I also totally know what they meant, because what they were saying was like, look, you've got so much potential. You are meant to occupy like a bigger space in the world. So like, what can we do about that? What can we do to help you? But like, if there are women who are listening to me say like, it's okay to want more and actually you should want more. Sometimes when we're in that situation where we feel like we're just making the best of it, like being a parent is hard, and looking after small children and even school age children and teen, like don't even start me on teenagers. Like I have all of that to come, but it's really hard. And I think sometimes we can feel like we're just about scraping by or like, you know, hanging on by the skin of our teeth. But I think in those moments, it's knowing that like, this might be really hard at the moment, but like if you have that inner calling and that spark of frustration that like this isn't actually the life that I wanted for myself, there is more out there for you, but you may have to be ready to go and get it. I think it's what I needed to hear, but I literally remember being very frustrated when I was confronted with that truth because it felt very out of reach at the time.
Yes, it's not easy. It's not easy. And thank you for being really honest about your breakdown as well. I think we can squeeze in the last two.
So number four is actually a book called The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. And it is basically about starting to find your zone of genius, the thing that only you can do, that is your highest calling, the thing that you were put on this planet to do. And he talks about the fact that we spend a lot of time in our zone of excellence and also our zone of competence. Mm. And I think a lot of women get stuck in these two zones and they're like, why am I so unfulfilled? Why am I so frustrated? And one of the things that he asks in the book, actually, he says, how much love are you ready to feel? And I read it the first time and I was like, what are you talking about? Like, so fluffy. But then actually, as I started to like reflect on the book and put it into practice and really like focus on like finding my zone of genius and being really committed to that, I did notice that like a lot of these things that have been quite frustrating, you know, like always being tired and like not really feeling like I was giving my best to the children because I didn't have any best for anyone because I'm trying to do all these things and like growing a business is so hard and all those kinds of things. But I think over time, I am feeling more love. I am feeling more positive emotions. So I think that's a really important thing. Like, we can be like, oh, you know, like there's a lot of depression and anxiety. That's kind of what the world is like now. But actually, that can be a sign that all is not what we want it to be. And so it's having the courage to go on that journey with yourself and just be like, what does this look like for me? Then the fifth thing is just commit to the journey. I had no idea what my journey was going to look like when I burnt out of my career. And I was just like, how am I on the scrap heap, age 27? Like, this is not what I thought married life was going to be like. But like, look where I am now. And like I said, I'm not finished. Like, I'm just getting started. I really do feel like my 40s are going to be my best decade. I feel nervous saying that because I'm like, oh my gosh, am I going to get hit by a bus tomorrow now I've said that? But I think I've talked about on my podcast, like, get to the point of no return. Commit to that journey. You don't want to be kind of like one foot in each camp or kind of sitting on the fence with it. You want to be at a point where it's like, I have to go forward. I have to keep doing this. I have to keep following this path. I can't stay still anymore because it costs too much. Like, our happiness and our fulfillment is just worth so much more than that.
Brilliant, Jessica. Thank you so much. I mean, your energy, your enthusiasm, your living proof, I guess, that, you know, it is possible to step off that corporate rat race and build your own shaped business that is perfectly shaped around you.
Literally.
And make it successful.
So, definitely. And Jane, I just want to say you absolutely are as well. Like, I'm so inspired by who you are and what you're doing. I think it's absolutely amazing.
Thank you. Your points just now about sticking with it and believing in it, they really resonated.
Well, that's the thing. Early on, you don't have the evidence. Like, it's just your vision. That's the fuel that everything's running on. But actually, now I'm at a point where, like, my family will quite, they'll be like, oh, your business is really cool. But they didn't say that at first. They were we're worried that you're going to go bankrupt. And it's like, well, everyone is, but let's just see what happens.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
My thanks to Jessica for a very honest conversation about life as a consultant, building her own business, building a client base, and leveraging her prior experience to lead her to what she does now. Don't forget to check out our website for the coaching voucher once again. We are at www.careeringintomotherhood.com. And tune in next week for some very exciting news about our first ever in-person get-together in 2023. Thanks for listening.